Yes.
Yeah.
It was all out there.
And now we'll ask Ed Ellinger to deliver the prayer, everyone.
Hands together with a little bit of hand sanitizer.
Did you bring that?
Cough into your sleeve.
Would you like to? I can bring it. I did bring it to most of the other members.
Ed, I am office next to you. I should be, you know, okay, right?
Yeah. You are okay.
Depends on how you look at that.
Most days.
Yeah, right. All right, let me get my collective act together here. I got it right here. Okay. I'll call the meeting to order. Thank you very much for taking the time to attend today's EQB meeting. I would like to, well, let's move directly to the consent agenda. You should have the copy of the agenda in hand. I'll get there. Yep. I will do the new member introduction here as soon as we adopt the consent agenda.
Mr. Chair, I move approval of the consent agenda.
Second.
You've heard the motion. There is a second. Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you. At this point in time, I would like to introduce two new members of our board. And the first new member is Commissioner Charlie Zelli.
Yes.
And Charlie's second day on the job. Charlie serves as Commissioner of Transportation, and we're so pleased, Commissioner, to have you participate in this board.
Thank
so
you,
if
Chairman.
You'd like to make a couple of comments, we'd be totally open to that.
Well, I'm
totally.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm delighted to be here. It is my second day on the job, and I was just saying a few others. Unfortunately, Deputy Commissioner, who had been the Acting Commissioner, Bernie Arsenault, has a medical issue and surgery, and I realize that I'm standing in front of the fire hose. I am learning and acting, and but I got a briefing a lot about the EQB, so I'm thrilled to be here, and I really admire the idea and the work, so I'm ready to learn. I'm ready to be here. Thank you.
Well, excellent, and again, welcome. We're also so pleased to announce the Governor Dayton's most recent appointment to the EQB, and I happen to have a copy of the press release here. Today, Governor Mark Dayton announced the following appointment to the Minnesota Environmental Quality Board. Ms. Kate Knuth from New Brighton, Minnesota, has joined us on the board. Kate, you know, is a longtime member of the state legislature and is pursuing a graduate degree as we speak, and I suspect her thesis, her PhD thesis, will probably be on the functioning or dysfunctioning of the EQB board. So please welcome Kate, and Kate, we'd be pleased to hear a couple of comments from you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm excited to be here. I'm looking forward to working in the executive branch a little bit after a few terms of legislative service. And
House trained, they call that.
House trained, right? Yes. And I also work at the Institute on the Environment at the university and run a program there and attempt to work on my PhD as well. So this feels like a nice fit with all of that.
It's a great fit, and we are so pleased to have you as a member of the board. At this time, I think what I'd like to do is make a for those of you that don't know, Ed Ellinger, Commissioner Ellinger, we'll start over here on the
Ed Ellinger, Commissioner of Health.
Julie Gehring, citizen member from Moorhead.
Tom Landwehr, Commissioner of DNR.
John Saxogs, citizen member from Minneapolis.
Eric Tomlinson, a citizen member from St. Paul.
Mike Rothman, Commerce Commissioner.
I'm Leah Hedman. I'm an Assistant Attorney General. I'm advising the board.
Dave Frederickson, Commissioner of Agriculture and Chair of the Board.
Bob Patton, Executive Director.
Kate Knuth, citizen member from New Brighton.
Brian Napstead, Chairman of the Board of Water and Soil Resources.
I'm John Lankstein. I'm the Commissioner of the Pollution Control Agency.
Katie Clark-Steven, Commissioner of Deed.
And Charlie Zelli, Commissioner of MnDOT.
I'd also like to make one special introduction, if maybe Andrea Featherston could rise. Andrea is starting her third day on the job, and Andrea is the commissioner's new executive assistant, replacing Becky Jurgensen, who was there for a couple of years. So we're really pleased to have Andrea join the MDA staff, and Lord knows I need help.
She has to sing, right?
Pardon me? Yes, she was going to sing the Star Spangled Banner. No.
Whole song. The MDA song.
Dave, are we going to start a pool on how long she'll last?
Yeah, right. Yes. Now you're really going to get the goods on the person you're to be working with. So anyway, I'm so pleased to have Andrea join us. Andrea formerly was employed by Congressman Waltz in the Washington, D.C. office, so she understands, she was a staff member there, understands free food, and came back to Minnesota and worked with Congressman Waltz over the past year here, and Tim Waltz hates me. I've stolen two people from his staff, and so don't ask me to help you, Ed, to get Tim on board, because he'll just say no.
You're still angry about that, aren't you?
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, I've forgotten about that. Yeah. Ed stole my director of communications, and he had the audacity to come over and take his chair from his old office and replace it with a piece of junk from yours. So not to be outdone, we took his old chair back, took our good chair home, left a dead plant on the chair, and said, "Nice try."
You can see we get along very well in the Freeman Building.
Interagency.
We're trying to work out our problems. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. The chair's report. I don't think we've had a chance to come together since we held six meetings across the state, and I just want to let you know how pleased the governor is regarding the input that we got at the six meetings that were held all across Minnesota. I talked with him last night, and as did Ellen, and he complimented Ellen and Anna on the great work that they had done to work to put these meetings together, and so I just wanted to share that with you. They were so well attended. There is, I think, a hunger for information as it relates to the environment, and so I think that obviously pushed a turnout of a high of something over 400. I don't know, there was a lot of people. How much?
1,200 total.
Okay, 1,200 total, and that was actual count, right? I mean, if you me to estimate the size of a crowd, I'd say, you know, 8,000-10,000 probably showed up, but 1,200 actual numbers, which is pretty significant in terms of having sessions across the state, and so you should be proud of that, and thank all of you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to actually get there and participate in the process. It was good. So again, I hope that we have the same kind of interest as we move forward with our Environmental Congress that's we're looking at for the month of March. Beyond that, I think I'm going to defer to Bob on his executive director's report and maybe a couple of comments. So, Bob Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, at your places is some additional correspondence we received from citizens on silica sand. We just, when those come in, we try to compile them and hand them out at the board meetings. So you can read those at your leisure. I wanted to introduce Beth Tagdish. I hope I'm getting your last name right. Mary, who is also with us today, Mary Olson, has been our recording secretary for all this time and support to the EQB staff. And Mary has taken another job within the PCA. And we are sorry to see Mary go, but very pleased to have Beth Tagdish join us. Beth, if you could just kind of wave to folks, and so when you get emails, board members, that's who Beth is. And so we're very pleased to have her. We are going to not have one of the agenda items today, Living Word Bible Camp. I learned something this week, which was that our operating rules require us to have 10 calendar days notice to parties when we prepare, when staff prepares findings and conclusions. And so this is something I will burn in my memory for subsequent meetings. So we will be preparing those findings and getting them out to the parties, and the Living Word Bible Camp matter will come back the Living Word Bible Camp matter is a redesignation of RGU, and that was before the board actually in June, where the board tabled it because the matter was under appeal at that point to the Court of Appeals. So the project has now gone through the courts and is back off the table for the board, but we will not be able to hear that at this meeting, and we'll be covering that at the February meeting. So stay tuned on that. Ellen Anderson and I will be appearing before the Senate Environment Committee tomorrow just to give a brief overview on the board. I'm going to be just covering the board background. Ellen's going to be talking about the executive order. And I think it's a great opportunity for us to highlight some of the great things the board's been doing of late. And finally, I wanted to echo Commissioner the chair's report on the citizen forums, and I wanted to especially thank the agencies and the staffs that helped us with putting those on. Wouldn't have been possible at all without the great assistance we got from the agencies, and we had a number of people that were with us at each and every one, and really helped out. We needed the help because we were overwhelmed at times with the response we got from the public. So really appreciate the help we received from agency staff. With that, I will turn it back to the chair.
All right, questions for Bob? Hearing none, I forgot to go around the room. Jim, do you want to introduce yourself? Why would you introduce yourself when I already called you by name, right? Yeah.
Jim. Center for Environmental Advocacy. Yeah.
Anna?
Anna Sherman with the Department of Ag and the EQB.
Ellen Anderson with the EQB, Commissioner Fredrickson, Governor, et cetera.
Will?
Will Soyford, Senior Policy Advisor in the Governor's Office.
Don Arnosti with Audubon, Minnesota.
Don.
Suzanne Sabatka with Senator Matt Schmidt's office.
Andrea Featherston with the Department of Ag.
Jeff Smizer, EQB staff.
Those of you that don't recognize Jeff, he had a haircut this week.
That's not
Kate
much
France,
of a haircut.
EQB staff.
That's right. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Kate France, EQB staff.
Dave Christensen, MnDOT.
Larry Kramke, Houston Engineering.
Heather Ahrens, DNR.
Julie Paris, Larkin Hoffman.
Travis Jermanson, Board of Water and Soil Resources.
Rand Lonine, DNR, Technical Representative.
Susan Medhaug, Department of Commerce.
Lee Helgen, Envision, Minnesota.
Jim Kelly, Minnesota Department of Health.
Jake Wallenius, Vagre Baker Daniels.
Deborah Moynihan, MnDOT.
Michelle Ross, Department of Health.
Susan Heffron, Pollution Control Agency.
Michelle Beeman, Pollution Control Agency.
Thank you. At this time, I think we'll move directly. Again, the Living Word Bible Camp issue is off the table for at least the next 10 days or a month, and we can pick that up at that time. And the rules are 4405.
And the operating rules.
Yeah, so you knew the rule number right off the bat.
Yeah, right.
That's right. 4405.
Committed to memory.
Committed to memory? I'll never let you forget. Screwed this one up, right?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just a suggestion. There was a substantial amount of materials in the board packet regarding the Living World Bible Camp.
Yes.
And I know it's easy to say we should all bring it to the next meeting, but I also experienced how that doesn't work very well. Maybe we can give this to staff prior to our leaving, and they can go back
and hang
on
to
the next packets.
Yeah. That is a good idea, Brian. We will then move directly to the mandatory environmental review categories report, and you should have a, I believe, a copy of that. It's obviously it's the larger one, and Jeff, I think, is here to introduce that and begin the discussion. Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Welcome back, everybody. First meeting of the new year for the board. It's always a fresh start, at least we like to think so. This item is about initiating the formal rulemaking process to see what changes the public and members of the different agencies would like to see made for certain aspects of the environmental review program rules. We have a report in the document. Just to make it clear to everyone, we are not asking for approval of this document. This is here mostly for information purposes. What we are asking for as an action item here for the board is approving a resolution that will start the process to get formal comments on the rules and see where we go from there. But for a background, what we're talking about here is that there was a report ordered by the Minnesota legislature, of the 2012 legislature. They, in fact, amended the Minnesota Environmental Policy Act, or MEPA, which the act that ordered the creation of the Environmental Review Program, environmental impact statements and the like. The amendment says that the specified agencies, in consultation with political subdivisions, will look at the different mandatory categories in the environmental review program. That is, there are categories that specify for certain types of projects of certain size or scope. It's either mandatory that an environmental assessment worksheet be prepared or environmental impact statement be prepared. So the legislation orders the agencies to look at all those mandatory categories and report on the categories for which each agency is responsible for preparing the environmental review document. That is, if they are the responsible governmental unit. This whole program is just rife with acronyms. It gets really confusing. So the RGU, for those who are not familiar with the whole program, the responsible governmental unit, that's the governmental unit that is required by the rules to prepare the environmental review document. It could be a state agency, it could be a local governmental unit, could be a watershed district, whatever. So the different agencies, the different state agencies, were ordered to prepare a report based on the categories for which they are the designated responsible governmental unit. The political subdivisions, meaning the counties, cities, townships, so on and so forth in the state, there was no agency designated to look at those categories, so we took that on. The EQB staff took that on. We did get some help. We got a lot of help from the Department of Commerce on a number of categories regarding nuclear waste facilities, power generating facilities, things like that. We got a lot of help from the Department of Agriculture on genetic engineering categories because all the genetic engineering has been agriculturally based. So that's where the knowledge is. The analyses, the legislation does not say it has to be one report. It says each agency will prepare a report. Agency staff got together midsummer and talked about this and decided we'll all prepare our own pieces based on a similar format and we'll just put them all together and submit them to the legislature and the governor at the same time as a matter of convenience. Because of that, we didn't feel that it was appropriate for the Environmental Quality Board or any other particular agency to approve or disapprove the entire assembled document, because the EQB doesn't have the authority to approve work by the Pollution Control Agency or the DNR and so on and so forth. Nonetheless, we thought it was a good idea to put it all together as one document. And that's really the basis of the resolution we're going to ask you to approve here. The recommendations, the report that was supposed to be prepared talks about you will look at the following things: the intended historical purposes of each category, whether the projects in those categories are also subject to state, local, or federal permits or laws, and then if each category should be modified, eliminated, or unchanged. Now, there are dozens of different categories. Some of the categories have 4 to 8 different subcategories within them. So it's actually quite a lengthy list, which is why this document is so thick. So the recommendations that came out of it, very, very briefly, the local governmental unit categories, were recommending that the thresholds and language be clarified, the thresholds be examined and or language be clarified in 8 different categories. MnDOT came up with 1 category that they're recommending revising a threshold. The EQB categories themselves, the recommendation is to review 6 categories to make sure everything's covered. There's been some changes and shifting of responsibilities since the rules were originally written, so we want to make sure that the different possibilities are covered. There may be some gaps, we want to make sure, and there may be some overlap, so we want to make sure that's cleared up. The DNR's recommendations are that the 3 categories be revised, some for updates, some for clarifications, and that 1 category be eliminated because it's never been used since the beginning of the environmental review program. And the PCA categories, PCA is recommending reviewing 6 categories for updates and language clarifications. Updates on a lot of these have to do with laws have changed or industry practices have changed, rules have changed, and are the rules really doing what they need to do in light of all those other factors. So the next step is to begin the rulemaking process to invite public comment on revising the mandatory categories. There will be very few specific recommendations. The recommendations at this point are review this category to see if it makes sense that such and such needs to be changed. That's about it. There isn't, there's only 1 category, I think, that says change, the recommendation that says the change should be threshold from here to here. The other ones are far broader than that, and we want to make sure that the public weighs in on these, as well as other categories that the public may think need to be looked at. So the resolution before you is to authorizing the chair to issue a request for comments on the categories. And that rule, that's the first part of the rule amendment process, often called rulemaking. It's all governed by state law, Minnesota Statute Chapter 14. And that statute is based on the need to get public comment, allow the public access to the whole process, none of the behind closed doors, changing of rules, and things like that. So that will be noticed in the EQB monitor, in the state register. People who are interested, they'll be able to see it on the EQB website that we're asking for comments and how to do that. So it's a very rather formal process that the comments get put together, and we'll see where we go from there. So what we're asking for, the resolution in your packet, is to approve basically initiating the rulemaking by authorizing the chair to issue a request for comments. And that's about what I have to say. I can certainly take questions from the board.
Thanks, Jeff. Questions? Commissioner Landwehr?
Mr. Chairman, Jeff, the statute actually says that a report should be prepared and submitted.
Correct.
We're taking the next step and saying, okay, given these recommendations, we're going to be doing rulemaking.
Mr. Chairman, as a board, yeah, that's correct. And I left out, we will be submitting this report to the committee chairs in the legislature and the governor as the legislation requires. But yes, we're saying, okay, here's a report. Frankly, we're a bit late on this, so we want to get things moving. I know that there are people from all perspectives who are waiting for something to happen on this, so we want to make sure that it doesn't stop. We apologize for the delay in getting this finished, but here we are. Let's keep the ball rolling.
So two points to that. One is that if we're going to submit this report, it seems like one action we ought to take today is accept the report from staff and recommend it be submitted to the chairs and the governor. That's not part of this current resolution, but since that's what we're doing, it seems like that ought to be a separate resolution. Second, I'm just curious why we go from preparing the report to going into rulemaking. Is there a trigger? Is there a legislative or rule trigger that requires that we do that, or are we just taking this on our own?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, a little of both on your second question, and then we'll come back to the first question. The second question being, why are we going right into rulemaking? There hasn't been a solid, comprehensive review of these categories for many years. I know that there are a lot of people who have been saying, geez, that should be changed to say such and such. You know, this one isn't quite right. I've been hearing that for years, even before I got here when I was dealing with the program in my capacity in a previous life. My version of the rules has all sorts of post-it notes and things in the corners that maybe this isn't updated, maybe this should go, and I'm sure I'm not unique in that. Because the legislation actually said this report was supposed to be submitted by December 1st, we're a month and a half behind. We felt that it would be a good idea to just, let's keep moving. Let's try to catch up on the whole process here.
Jeff, I've been just chatting with Bob, and he might be able to offer an answer to Commissioner Landwehr's question before.
Commissioner Landwehr, this is to your question that whether the board should accept the vote to accept the report. And we, first of all, you know, we in talking about this, I think as Jeff has reflected, you know, we talked about, you know, what is this report? It's really a compilation of different agency reports just put together for convenience. We did talk about whether the board portion of it was something the board needed to vote on, and decided that the board probably didn't need to, that it was somewhat of a staff administrative function, and the chair could probably sign off on the board's portion for submittal to the legislature. So that was a decision we had made before we got here. So part of the issue is that we do not have this listed as an action item on the agenda, and so the board really can't vote on even acceptance of the report at this time because it wasn't listed as an action item on the agenda as such. So our operating rules require us to, when the board is going to be voting on something, to have it listed as such on the agenda. So the board really is constrained from doing that today.
Okay. A couple of points, Mr. Chairman.
Tom.
Whenever the department is required to submit a report, I do a letter of transmittal.
Right.
And I don't know if that's required or if it's just a matter of protocol or whatever, but if we don't, as a board, endorse this, I don't know how the chair of the board can sign a letter of transmittal. I understand that there are specific things in here to relate to the DNR that I can send over under DNR letter, and the same with PCA and the DOT. It's the third named one on here. But for the report to come from the EQB, I don't know that a staff signature is the appropriate transmittal letter.
You may be right on that, and we had decided otherwise or had thought otherwise before we came to the meeting, but that it's a very good point. Part of it was timing. We were in that we were working on this on the assumption that we would get to need to have it submitted by a December deadline, and that would have meant that would have been on the November board agenda at that time, and we just didn't have it. It just wasn't there yet because of all the other things we were working in November. So I guess it was a bit of an administrative decision that it probably didn't need board action before to go forward, and the chair could sign off on it.
So Mr. Chair, Bob, let me ask. We did have on the agenda that we would do something with the – I'm looking at it now on the agenda. It doesn't say we're going to take any action on the – So how do we then solicit this to request comments if that isn't listed as an action item on the agenda?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, a couple things. The comments will occur, the public comment period will occur as part of the formal rulemaking process that would be initiated by the resolution we're asking you to approve. We're asking that the board approve issuing a request for comments according to Minnesota Statute Chapter 14, which is the Administrative Procedures Act.
Yes.
That act creates the requirement for a very clearly specified commenting period, and that is where the comments will come from. That's one of the other reasons why we didn't think trying to get comments on these pieces at this point would work very well. It would be redundant in a lot of ways. And again, these reports come from the different agencies, and who has the authority to approve the different agencies' pieces. Now, the point that you raise about the transmittal, who's authorizing the transmittal, I think that's a really good question. And I think that's something that arises because of the nature of the EQB organization, which is different from anybody else. I mean, the EQB doesn't have authority over these different agencies, but yet the question is, well, then how can we submit work from these other agencies?
Well, the statute directs the EQB to do it. I mean, we have the
authority. Actually, the statute directs all four agencies to do it.
But it names the EQB, so.
It names the others as well.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm saying by specifically naming the EQB, that I think the EQB is authorized to submit a letter of transmittal or submit the report along with the other three agencies.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, members of the board, I'm wondering if I might offer a suggestion to resolve this.
Excuse me, Jeff. We're having a sidebar conversation with legal counsel.
Right. Always important. I would suggest this. Is it possible? Okay, there are three agencies and the EQB who prepared work in this report. Is it much of a problem that the commissioners of each one of those agencies could just issue a cover letter saying, this is our piece, we approve this, or whatever works for you, and then there would be basically four cover letters that go with this. That way, the EQB is off the hook for, do we have to approve this? We could get a letter, you know, from MnDOT, DNR, PCA, and EQB, and say, here's the report in compliance with Minnesota laws, so-and-so.
We were having that very discussion with legal counsel, Edmund, and so have you had a chance to review the rules an adequate amount of time to speak on the issue?
No, very little time.
We could do this. We could put this discussion off, pick up the next item on the agenda. It would give you some time to drill down on the rules, and unless Commissioner Landwehr, there is also another option, and that is to put it off the adoption of the report until next meeting. But again, with the slim staff and inadequate time, this is where we find ourselves on this one. And I certainly don't mean to usurp the authority of the board to do this, but felt that it was okay to move forward. So my apologies.
Well, Mr. Chair, my apologies if I brought something up that we don't need to deal with. If this is a non-germane issue, then I think let us just move on. If we should be dealing with it, then we can either give council more time to take a look at it, or I can even suggest that in the current resolution we could insert just a phrase, accept the report and authorize the chair. We could use the current resolution to do two things, recognizing that it changes the nature of the resolution somewhat, but...
Or no, one more vehicle resolved, right? In the resolution.
Draft resolution we've got, right?
Okay. Can you recommend some language?
Mr. Chair, maybe in order to do this officially, let me make a motion to move the resolution with the following amendment, that in the now therefore be it resolved that the EQB hereby authorizes the chair to accept the report and publish a request. So insert three words.
Accept the report and publish the request. Is that what
right.
you mm-hmm. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, okay. Got it.
Wingman,
that's right. Okay. You've heard the motion together with the amendment. Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
There is a second. No, discussion? Legal counsel, are you comfortable with that draft language?
I am comfortable. I think it's a minor amendment to the resolution that's already been on, including the agenda item did include this as an item for topics. So I think in terms of public notice to those who may want to participate in the meeting, it was already on the agenda. It would have provided them notice that there was going to be some discussion of the report itself. So this seems a bit to be minor to me to the current resolution. I think it's okay.
Thank you. I can sleep at night.
Didn't say that.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Stein.
I just wanted to return to Commissioner Landwehr's point about moving directly from producing the report, accepting it, to rulemaking. I'm interested in hearing from other board members on that subject about its workload, you know, to notice your intent to adopt a rule, to modify a rule. There's work that goes along with that. And I just was curious from the rest of the members whether they're in support of going from that point of issuing the report to making rule revisions.
Any response to Commissioner Stein's?
Tell you next Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's the concern, isn't it, Commissioner, that we haven't yet, you know, we don't fully understand where we're at from a future planning standpoint because the governor's budget is not released, and therefore we're still in to some extent, unable to predict how well we'll be able to fulfill a commitment. Now, if you accept the idea that you're going to publish the notice and you're going to review it with the possibility that you won't move forward with rule revisions, that's a part of Chapter 14. That's perfectly acceptable. But I want to get a sense of the board. I don't want to send the staff a wrong message that we're fully committed to making rules if we're not. And I would prefer to issue the notice of our intention to amend the rules and then review the public feedback and comments that come in before further action occurs. So I'm in favor of putting out the public notice, requesting public comment, evaluating those comments, and then having another discussion before the board about the scope of potential rulemaking. Because I'm just concerned about the volume of rulemaking that's already going on, and I've heard from a number of organizations and local units of government that they're concerned about many, many rules in one period of time, and it's hard for the public to see how their efforts are going to have the greatest benefit when many things are going on. So I'm a little concerned about getting it planned and staffed correctly.
Does that concern move you to any action
At this point, Mr. Chair, no. I'm comfortable with the resolution as long as we understand that I don't want the staff to proceed to act on the first step of the public notice by then promising or indicating to members of the public or the organizations that will comment that there's more anticipated than step one. That's my I'm okay with understanding that we're going to take step one, and then we're going to hear back from the staff. Okay, that would be my preference.
Thank you. Bob, and there, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Stein, appreciate your comment. And that has been what you articulated has been the intent of staff on this all along, that we would start with the request for comments, see where that where we wind up with that, and then make decisions on what to do going forward. Related to that, one of the other items here, and it's not necessarily an action item, but a call for volunteers, I think, who would wish to serve on a subcommittee, EQB subcommittee, on this rulemaking. We are utilizing MPCA's rulemaking staff as our staff for this process, and part of the standard PCA process is to have a steering committee on the rulemaking in discussion with rulemaking staff, determined that probably an EQB subcommittee would be the most appropriate steering committee for this effort. So you think about board members, think about your interest in serving on a subcommittee for this rulemaking, and that would allow the board to have some extra special attention to what decisions the board wants to make on after we hear from comments.
And legal counsel Hibman also pointed out, correctly so, that it says in the now therefore be it resolved that possible amendments, so it doesn't say that there in fact will be, and so we go from there. We will be looking at, for those of you that hold a lifelong ambition to serve on a subcommittee that will deal exclusively with rulemaking, this is your chance.
The teacher.
Yeah, wow, this is my chance.
This
is,
yeah.
There you go.
This could be your one and only.
This could be your one and only, right?
Don't miss it.
Don't want to miss it.
Mr. Chair,
yes,
just
Jeff?
One more comment for the board. Since the draft that you have in your packet was distributed in your packet, we have heard back from a couple different agencies for some clarification in the language that's in the report. I don't think there's anything major, and after all, you're not really approving anybody's recommendations anyways. There were a couple categories that the DNR was still wrestling with. They've come to a point of agreement within their agencies on what those recommendations should be. There was some language clarification from the Department of Commerce in the introduction to the report explaining what was going on. I just wanted to let you know there are some relatively minor changes to the report that's in front of you that would be incorporated into it before it was transmitted on to the next stage. Didn't really want to get into that because we've got it's huge. I mean, at what point do you want to get into details? We certainly can if you'd like, but I just wanted to let you know that there would be some minor amendments to
it. But we also will have an opportunity to review it prior to transmittal. Is that right?
If you would like, we could do that. We can, you know, send out emails to it to everybody if you'd like. And again, we're going to be taking comments on the categories, and you know, public comments will be on what is issued then. So the board is not committing to anything right now. I guess that's the point.
Yeah. Legal counsel Hedman indicates that. Well, you go ahead and speak to the issue.
No, I was just saying, if you have a transmittal letter, if it is signed by the individual, the three sort of key individual commissioners, then they could have their staff brief them on the albeit minor changes, make sure they're comfortable making the certification or that they've received it and accept it, and then transfer it that way.
Right. So we do think it's a good idea to get individual transmittal letters from the different agencies. That was suggested. That's are we going there?
Perhaps a board decision.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, I'd suggest we have one letter with four signatures on it.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. We're on the motion, and I don't know if you want to incorporate that in the motion or just as a standard procedure.
Which, Mr. Chairman?
The one transmittal letter that we were just talking about.
We can
about.
Just handle it
Let's
administratively.
Do it, okay.
Bob
right.
got that.
On
so
the motion.
I'm taking note.
Okay. On the motion. Brian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just with regard to the motion, it pertains to the resolution. The resolution has been modified with the language that this board is accepting the report. And with that new language, I have some concerns with regard to the report. However, as I understand the process, we are essentially moving this on to the comment period. We're going to take those comments. Consistent with that, we're going to form a subcommittee. That subcommittee will accept the comments, potentially modify this document, and it will come back for board approval.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, not quite. This report would be done as a report. The comments would be something to the effect of the Environmental Quality Board is considering amending the mandatory categories. Do you have any comments? And the public will weigh in on whatever mandatory categories they want to comment on. Then we would take those comments, bring it back to the subcommittee and say, okay, do we want to proceed with the rule amendment process? Do we have the resources to do that? That's where we would get into the level of looking through category by category and say, this is what the public said about category subpart 24. Do we think this is a good idea? If the EQB as an organization thinks it's a good idea, then we would be preparing a large document known as, I love this one, Statement of Need and Reasonableness, which is the phrase in statute, a SONAR, saying, or it goes on forever before it gets to any meat, and then it gets to the individual categories and says, here's what the current category says. We're proposing to change it to this, and this is why. And then there's actually another, I think, comment period on then. Is that right? I'm not even quite sure about that. But then it would go to the administrative law judge, and, I mean, this will not be done before the end of year 2013, or close.
And Mr. Chairman, my concern is... Right. I actually went through the eye test and read this document, and it was small, believe me.
Sorry, yeah, it was designed for 11 by 17.
But at any rate, by modifying the resolution to indicate our acceptance of the document, there's things in that document that I may or may not accept, or information I may want more background on. We've got historic buildings, national historic buildings on the National Historic Register if we move or take them down. I'm not sure that fits on an environmental assessment document. Perhaps it does, perhaps it doesn't. Discussion may need to take place to justify why that does belong on that document. But the bottom line is, we are, as I reviewed this, I wasn't reviewing it with the task in mind of accepting it and saying, move this forward, I agree with it. I was thinking about this document in the form of moving into a comment period where it's going to come back to us for potential modification. What I'm really asking is, if we don't get public comment on this, do we go to rulemaking with this document whenever that happens to be?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, the answer to that is no. That's a really well-phrased question. We are not asking for comments on this. We will be asking for comments on the mandatory categories listed in Minnesota Rules 4410. Does the public have opinions, recommendations for amending mandatory categories in Minnesota Rules 4410? That's what the comment is going to ask. These are the different agencies' recommendations. Well, whether that comes out in the wash, that is yet to be determined. I mean, that's the way I'm envisioning this. I mean, we don't have the request for comments written. Executive Director Bob, you've been through this before. I haven't. But I don't think we at this time had any – I mean, I didn't have any idea of saying these are the changes to specific categories that we're considering. That's what this report says, or leave this one alone. But that's not what we're going to be advocating or putting out there yet.
Mr. Chairman.
That being the case, then why are we dealing with the language of accept the report? Could we just
We have to
maybe,
submit a report. That's go back.
I understand
to
that.
Submit a report to the legislature. But Mr. Chairman, if I could follow up on that, so we get comments on the general language that Jeff mentioned, and it says, okay, you ought to look at this one, you ought to look at that one. We've got the agency report. When we devise what the draft rule changes might be, is that by the EQB or is that by the separate agencies? And if it is by the EQB, does that mean then we have an opportunity, to Brian's point, to come back and look at the changes that we're proposing?
Mr. Chair Commissioner Landwehr and Knapstad, in terms of rulemaking, that is clearly, squarely under the Environmental Quality Board. That is an action that the board would take to authorize rulemaking.
Okay. So we, to Brian's point, we will collectively have the opportunity to look at the proposed rule changes because we'll bring that back to the board for our endorsement before we go into the ALJ process.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Landwehr, yes, on the rulemaking. Now, to confuse things a little bit further, we've got two things happening here. We have a report that we're required to submit to the governor and the legislature by legislation that was passed last year. That's one thing that's before the board right now, and frankly, we weren't intending it to be before the board when we brought it to you today. We were intending it to just advise you that we were going to be submitting this. I think appropriately so, Commissioner Landwehr, you've suggested that the board should endorse the report to go forward to the legislature and the governor. On that point, Commissioner Knapstad, this is the opportunity for the board to make any comments on the report that's here before you, because this is the last opportunity. We were intending for this to go directly to the legislature and the governor. So that's one completely separate thing. It's a requirement of the of law for us to submit this report. Entirely separate from that, though, one of the implications of the report, and probably the reason the legislature required the report in the first place, is that there's great interest in the community, in the business community, in the environmental community, over what those mandatory categories are and whether thresholds should be adjusted, whether some categories should be eliminated or changed. And given that and anticipating that interest, We staff collectively with the agencies in a lot of discussion have determined it would make a lot of sense for at the same along with this report being submitted for the board to start a rulemaking process in terms of putting out a request for comments, because what we frankly wish to happen is, if there are any changes to mandatory categories, we wish those to occur within an orderly rulemaking process under the board rather than have changes be made in the statute, for example, which is, we feel, is not the way to change mandatory categories, because the mandatory categories appear in the rule. And so we are feeling that it's prudent for the board to start a rulemaking process, to start a conversation about the mandatory categories and whether the rule should be changed. So that's an entirely separate thing, and as we've discussed, that's totally under the control of the board in terms of whether we proceed with rulemaking. So I hope I haven't totally confused you on this, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Well, Mr. Chair, Bob, I guess thank you. It's actually clarified it, but I guess to Commissioner Knapstad's point, are we open to changing this before we accept it and submit it to the governor and the chairs?
I would assume we'd be open to changing it, but if we adopt it today, we probably are not.
Right.
And so I think you have a decision to make whether to accept the motion or to reject the motion and then come back and redraft what your intentions would be and put that in the form of a motion. So I sense that there's enough concern around the table.
Mr. Chair, I'm just asking the question. I don't know to what extent there is concern about the content of the report. I looked at the stuff that was respective to the DNR, and I'm satisfied with that, but I didn't look at the rest of it. And obviously, Commissioner Knapstad did.
All we would be doing, Jeff, would be to put off by another couple of weeks the presentation of the report to the committees. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, I'll be honest, I'm not sure quite what it is we're considering. Certainly, the board does not have to take action if it doesn't want to. I want to really clarify something here. Nobody is asking for board approval or endorsement of what this report says because, frankly, I'm not convinced the board has the authority to approve the DNR's recommendations or the PCA's recommendations or MnDOT's recommendations, which is what this document is. The EQB staff prepared the review of the local government categories by default. We took that on, and the EQB categories. This is not a recommendation from the EQB. These are recommendations from the EQB, MnDOT, PCA, and DNR. Now, based on those different agencies' recommendations, the EQB would like to start the comment period for public comment on all the categories, whether or not the different agencies are recommending change to them. That's what we're asking for. We are not implying or asking that forwarding this means that the DNR approves the PCA's recommendations or the PCA approves MnDOT's recommendations or that MnDOT approves EQB's recommendations. That's why we wanted to stay away from approval of this report, because I'm not sure that we can. The alternative from the beginning was the DNR submit their own report, Pollution Control Agency submit their own report, MnDOT submit their own report, and the EQB submit their own report. That was an option. Interagency staff discussion decided that let's just put them all together, and there we go. It seems to me that a letter from the four different commissioners or chair is sufficient to say, okay, here are the recommendations based on the requirements of the statute. Now, the next thing is, okay, so what? And what we're trying to do is answer that so what by asking the public, what do you think about the categories as they stand? Board members, Knapstad, question about the particular category, the historic properties. That's the existing rule right now. There are those out there who don't think that environmental review should have anything to do with historic properties. There are those who think the opposite very vehemently, and we've heard from, you know, all of them. So our view right now is don't mess with it, but the public comment may change what this board thinks. And so this board will get the public comments. We'll put together what the public comments said as part of the formal rulemaking, possible rule-changing process, and those will come before the board, and that's what the board will make decisions on.
Forward. Commissioner Landwehr, what do you think about possibly withdrawing your motion and adopting the original motion, which directs the board through the chair to publish a request for comments on, quote, possible amendments? In other words, exactly what the resolution said initially. Well, I think on the farm, we have this tendency to get twine string wrapped around the axle, and I think we have the same analogy here, and we've sort of gotten ourselves wrapped around the procedural axle, and it's starting to squeeze us pretty tight.
Mr.
If
Chair,
you're unsure of the portion that you need to sign off on or not sign off on, then I would assume that you would address that within DNR and say, fix this before I agree to sign off on it, I would do the same. So I recognize your concern.
I'm fine with separating these. I'm still a little confused as to how we will submit this report. Will it be one report or four reports?
Well, I would think it would be, and again, back to the issue of having those signers that submitted these comments to this report sign off on it. So it could be a transmittal letter signed by you, signed by the other departments that may interpret. Yeah.
And Ms. Chair, and I really did not intend on spending this much time on it, but EQB is listed.
Yes.
And so you the chair would have that letter.
I would, yes, I could. Or
which just raises the issue back here. Did the EQB sign this? So but it in the spirit of getting at least one thing done, I'm absolutely fine with withdrawing my amendment and removing the resolution as it is printed.
We'll be back to square one then. So is that satisfactory with the seconder? Therefore,
I didn't second that motion.
I don't know if we had a second.
Charlie, did you?
I'll say yes.
Good. Go with me on this, will you? All right. Thank you both to the maker of the motion and the seconder. So now we're back to now, therefore, be it resolved that the EQB hereby authorize the chair to publish a request for comments on possible amendment of Minnesota Rules Chapter 4410.
And it's a roll call vote.
And it is a roll call vote. So
call the roll.
We are ready to call the roll if there is no further discussion. Julie, did you have your hand up? Okay, Bob.
All right. Commissioner Clark.
Yes.
Commissioner Ellinger.
Aye.
And Ms. Gehring.
Aye.
Commissioner Landwehr.
Aye.
Commissioner Knapstad.
No.
Commissioner Rothman.
Aye.
Mr. Saxog.
Aye.
Commissioner Stein.
Aye.
Commissioner Mr. Tomlinson.
Aye.
Commissioner Zelli.
Aye.
Ms. Newth.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, aye.
All right.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
11 ayes, one no.
We're done here. All right. The motion passes. And we will then go to the establishment of an EQB subcommittee, and I would hope that there would be a minimum of three members that would volunteer to be on the committee, an opportunity of a lifetime, I might add. Something that you would want.
Fortune shall follow.
You'd want on your tombstone. I was a member of.
And Mr. Chair, if.
In the eulogy.
Mr. Chair, if there's not overwhelming interest at this point, I think people could indicate interest in the interim.
Oh, no, we want them on the record. Yeah, we want them totally on the record. And I would think...
I will volunteer.
Good, I figured that would happen, and that's great. That's great.
Mr. Chair, I'm on board.
John Linkstein is on
Can
board.
I change my mind?
Just made my decision easier, Brian.
We need at least one more, and we could have up to five if you want. Don't all jump at the chance here. I'm looking at you. We have one citizen member.
Is this going to be the?
I'll be happy to participate.
This will be a
members, or will it be staff?
Be members.
It will be members. Put me down.
All right.
That's three of us, four of us. Perfect. Yep.
All right. Okay.
So Brian Knapstad, John Linkstein, Kate Knuth, and Fredrickson have agreed to participate on the subcommittee. We'll meet at the Department of Ag. Oh, okay, we can meet over here once in a while. All right, thank you very much. Jeff, anything else? That was nice to unwind the procedural ball of twine.
Thank you.
Why don't we take just a 10-minute break, and then we'll come back and take up the existing or the silica sand report discussion. We'll stand. 10-minute break is stretched into about 20, and so we're on farm time here. Yes, right. We're about ready for foreign afternoon lunch.
Dinner, you call it.
Dinner will be that we've already had dinner. That was at 12, yeah. We'll get to supper at 5 or 6 or whenever the chores are done. All right. We will then move to the silica sand report discussion. I'm going to ask Jeff to walk us through what we have in draft form, but I want to just for the record indicate that Governor Dayton is very, very concerned about the whole issue of silica sand mining and its impact and effect on that portion, the southeastern portion of the state of Minnesota. He definitely does not want projects getting approved before legislative decisions can be made. And if need be, I'm assured that he will use his executive powers to slow things down. He's looking for a serious discussion, a serious debate, but wants that to take place along with members of the legislature. But again, he is watching very carefully and very critically as to what's going on in the countryside. So with that, I'd ask Jeff to go into the report. It's, again, a draft report, and then we can open that up for discussions, certainly from a member or discussion or comment from the board, and I'll also ask if there's a comment from the public. Jeff?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Really would like to hear, I'll go through my piece pretty briefly because really what I'd like to hear is more discussion and comments from the board. That's my view what this agenda item is about. A little bit of a review very quickly. The board requested that state agency staff look at the issues related to the silica sand industry and prepare a report. The direction of the report was supposed to be, what do we know, what don't we know? Sort of a sub-theme as part of the discussion was, what is it that state government might be able to provide to local governments to help them address the issues that are important to them? But really, this report is about, what do we know, what don't we know? And there are a few things, just a few things I'd like to go through it. This is essentially the table of contents of the report as it stands. We think that these topic titles, chapters, we think we're covering the things that are important to people. I'm going to ask the board very quickly. Are we on track? Are we missing? Where do we need to go? I mean, the background of it, which is really about what is the whole silica sand industry? Why is it important? Who cares? You know, who needs it? All that sort of thing. There are people, a little aside, who still believe that fracking is going on in Minnesota and Wisconsin, who believe that fracking is the mining of the sand, or who see the sand mines or the processing plants, and they think that fracking is going on there. So this report does pointedly point out very clearly that that's sand is sand mining is sand mining, hydraulic fracking is oil and gas drilling, and that's not happening in Minnesota. So the background, market and economics, trying to get a handle on what the future demands might be. I'm not sure we can even do a very good job of that because it's so close. There are some sources of information. We need to check them, follow up. I think we can do something with that. I think we've got a start, but we have a ways to go on all of these things. Air quality, water quality, transportation issues, governance is just the word I use for that chapter, just to deal with local government regulation, state regulation, what's missing. There are some there are some elements of the whole industry that are very challenging, mostly, well, maybe we'll get into that a little more. And then the impacts on the sensitive resources, kind of converted that into a mapping project. There are a number of different layers of data that could be added to that. That project has not been done. It's a proposal that would be looking at where the sensitive resources, where the trout streams, where the native prairies, things like that. There's just no way to print that out on an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, which we found out in the previous discussion. But that mapping data is just so extensive, trying to get a handle on how should we deal with that. So that's really the structure of the report as it stands. A few things that I would ask people to keep in mind. This is, as is labeled, a preliminary working draft. Additional information clearly is needed. Don't even think that we're not aware that this is just a start. We are nowhere near having in there what we want to have in there, and that's one of the part of the discussion we want to have today. We're receiving information from other people. We're trying to verify that, track it down, make sure that we're covering the most important pieces. Secondly, this report is not going to be encyclopedic. We cannot have a document that tells you everything that anybody could possibly know or think about or ask about the industrial silica sand industry. It's really going to be a summary of a lot of things, except for specific items that we think might be important, we meaning the board and the agency staff. And again, well, not again, but I really want to make it clear, once it's finished, that's what we know at that time. The following week, an incredible discovery might be made that won't be in there. So at any one point, just remember that once it goes to the presses, that's what it is. But it is not going to cover everything that everybody in the world would want it to cover. I just want to make sure people understand that. Third, it should be reliable. And what I mean by that is any information in this report, I want to be able to have the source of it in my hand or in the file. So if anybody says, where did you hear that? I can say from this study, from this document, from this report, by the Federal Reserve, by the Department of Natural Resources, something. There are a lot of comments. There's a lot of talk. There are a lot of conversations. Unless, well, I feel that I can verify that piece of information, I am going to try to avoid putting it in the report because this is a very hot topic. Everybody's looking, and everything is going to be subject to question. And if somebody says, where'd you hear that? I want to be able to email them. This is the document that we got it from. There is some information that I've received, haven't been able to follow up on it yet. Some of it, it's going to be can't use it. Some of it, we will use it once we verify the source. So that's an ongoing process.
Have you, or do you feel comfortable that everything in this report is sufficiently documented, at least in the draft report at this time?
99% of it. Okay. There's a couple things in it that since I've looked at it and gone, you know, geez, I should have caught that, or maybe I should have put a question mark in, do we know this, or something.
But again, it's
largely, for the most part, there's a couple things that I think I'd like to check into it further. And again, there is going to be additions. So that's not finished yet. Fourth, this report is not an advocacy document. We are not pro-sand. We are not anti-sand industry. We are not advocating for any particular perspective. At least we're trying to avoid that. Right now, there have been some statements that have been pointed out that I copied out of particular articles that some people might think I'm taking sides. I didn't think so, but we can re-examine that, maybe take out an adjective, something like that. What I'm trying to do is avoid being seen as partisan. somebody who has a perspective who wants this report to advocate a position. If it doesn't, they might view it as partisan. I don't agree with that perspective, but we really are trying hard to make sure that this is not taking sides, advocating, unless or until the board directs that that's what the report should do. That's not my call. That's the board's call. But so far, that has been the approach. So the next step is really what we're looking for from the board today is, are we going in the right direction? Are we covering the topics that we should be covering here? These are the larger level questions, the larger category questions. Are we covering them? Are we getting there? And second of all, within those individual chapters, if you will, what specifics do you want covered? And maybe to what degree? The whole project is a little squishy. trying to get a grasp around what should be considered important enough to be covered in this report. And again, remember, it's what do we know and what don't we know? At the end of this, at the end of most of the chapters, there's a list of what don't we know yet. It's quite possible, I would say even probable, that most of those questions are not going to be answerable without dedicated resources, a dedicated project to researching that specific topic, whether it be, you know, air quality monitoring, research onto what sort of geological impacts might this have, our regulations covering transport of the product via rail adequate to protect this and that. There's a lot of different views on that, but all those things are sort of floating around. There aren't any real clean answers to those yet. So again, what do we know? What don't we know? And are we covering the topics so far? And what specifics do you think should be covered that aren't, or that at least we're not even making progress on, or that you think are just completely missing here? And that's really about the best I can do right now on asking for direction or where you want to go. I'm hoping you had the opportunity to read it. It is, again, a very preliminary working draft. I will say one more thing. Even though this report is being prepared at the behest of the board, the Environmental Quality Board, my approach to this so far has been it's a much larger audience than that. A lot of people are paying attention to this. The audience is the board, the different agencies, the legislature, the governor, and the public out there who are concerned about it. So it's clearly not as technical as many of your agency reports will be, but that's because a lot of the people out there aren't soil scientists or air quality scientists or transportation engineers, so on and so forth. That's the approach it's going. That's the approach I started out with and I'm trying to pursue. If you think that's inappropriate, we can certainly change that. It'll take time. But I guess I feel that the audience on this is so big, trying to not be exclusive on who it's written for. That's the approach anyways. With that, I probably talked too much already, and I'm here to listen.
Thank you, Jeff. Questions, comments from members of the board? Tom?
Mr. Chairman, a couple things. First off, Jeff, really nice start on this, really good information here. I don't think it's been compiled in other places. You know, the one of the things that I think we thought about this for was in our discussions about whether or not we want to proceed with a GEIS, what things don't we know that might be answered by a GEIS? And I guess I just want to, you know, be redundant and say that when I look at this report, the thing that's going to be most useful to me is to look at that what don't we know and see which elements of that are something that a GEIS might provide. So when you're putting it together, when you're refining it, Jeff, if you could take that standpoint, you know, and three things have risen to my mind, and I just want to make sure that when I look at this, if we know more than I thought, that's great. But if we still don't know them, in my mind, that starts setting out a scoping for a GEIS.
And I think that lines nicely with the governor's perspective on this, Commissioner, where I want information, I want more information. And
what don't we know that a GEIS might tell us?
Correct. Commissioner Ellinger?
Mr. Chair, you had mentioned that this is in the broader context, and I do think we should make some statement. You talk about what fracking is, but I do think that there should be some mention in here about there is discussions about whether or not fracking, the health impact and environmental impact of fracking itself, and we don't talk about that at all in here. I don't think we need to go into that, but I think we have to remember that this is a lead up to a process that goes from, you know, the frack sand to the fracking and the gas distribute oil and gas distribution. So just, you know, acknowledge that. And then I certainly agree with Commissioner Landwehr that the part of it that's going to be most important is what we don't know and what would be helpful. And really look if we can identify where data sources are or how to get. We're lacking a lot of data, and anything that we can do to find appropriate data sources, what's out there, what's not out there, and how we might be able to get to those is important. And I think and what an GEIS might do, but also what could we learn from an HIA health impact assessment, again, that would help make some decisions about where to go from here.
Okay. Thanks.
Mr. Chair.
I've got Commissioner Rothman and then Commissioner Stein.
I just want to echo my colleagues and say that, well, first of all, the report is thank you for the report. It does set out a lot of the issues and then identify some of the things it's important what we do and do not know. But in addition to the GEIS and the health impacts, there's other areas in which, you know, for what we don't know, there might be an additional, we can find additional ways to get the information. Let me just highlight some of the concerns from my perspective that are significant, at least as we're going through this. Not that any of the other ones are not either. As everyone knows, the energy sector and the gas and oil industry is driving a lot of this. And we know that nationally there's been this drive for fracking, and it's had a tremendous amount of supply generated on the gas side, which for the energy sector does have an impact. And for that matter, the Department of Commerce is overseeing and watching these trends. And while there are some economic benefits to a lot of this stuff, there are these overriding, or I should say some equally concerning problems that the mining has. With that, the things that are on forefront of my mind are that we want to make sure that the mining economy does not overtake the local economies. We heard some testimony, and I think the fact that we have a lot of unknowns in the local economies. Some testimony said, well, mining is maybe good for us. Some is bad for us, in particular economies. So I think so tourism impact and sort of overall commercial activity in Minnesota may not be addressed, but I think we need to know the impacts on the local economies and, most importantly, not allow the mining economy necessarily to get ahead of these impacts. We also don't know, and the concerns I have are in the transportation area. We spelled them out here. Let me just say the concerns before I move to transportation, the concerns that are outlined on pages 21 and 22 I think are significant in terms of the knowns and unknowns for I'm not saying the ones that are in air or groundwater are not as important, but these are some significant issues that are they need to be balanced as we go forward. And then I've had this concern, and I know that we've talked about this as well, is that highway safety, making sure that we have the appropriate safeguards in place for the transportation for our roads, and in particular for the local communities. And the one that I'm thinking of in particular are the Amish, that, we can't overlook that and make sure that we're protecting their interests to the extent that we can. And I know that the engineers and everybody that is working on those transportation issues are thinking of those things, but at the same time, you know, when we're talking about in the report as it does, potential fatalities and all that, we need to take in and factor all those things into account as we proceed. So it's a good start. Lastly, I would recommend that, you know, Jeff, you did a good job at sort of all these caveats. This is what it isn't and what it is not. And I don't see some of that spelled out in here, that it's sort of a preliminary, this isn't in depth. Those kinds of things you might want to add in, because I don't think we want people to say or think that this is in any way near the final word in terms of where we are. It's really an informational, preliminary informational gathering tool to assist local, state, and all of us public officials in making decisions on important action items that we need to be mindful of, and to facilitate discussion at the legislature.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Stein?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Jeff, also want to just credit you on, I know that where we began was with a series of PowerPoint presentations put together by a number of staff from different agencies, and it was a lot of work to put words, you know, to actually put text to those PowerPoint presentations, get that information reduced to writing. So thank you for doing that, however that came together. I know it's not an easy task, and I think the work that I would like to see happen next is let the staff that did the PowerPoint presentations review this and get even greater depth that they would find helpful in explaining the nature of their interest areas. So I recall we had a presentation from someone from Lands and Minerals and DNR. We had Pollution Control Agency. We had others, MnDOT, so forth. I would like to see the people who were lead on those presentations really kind of scrutinize the information that's here and look to clarify it as best they can without, you know, becoming a chase after the unknown. That's not the point. I don't want them to chase after the unknown. In addition to which, I just want to echo some of the concerns that and the map on page 35 is poignant to me. The map here shows sort of the potential extent of frac sand mine operations, from the mining of the resource to the processing of the resource, and the related railroads and others. So this map to me is the first that I've seen that really kind of tells a broader story. And part of what concerns me now that I have attempted to answer the governor's questions repeatedly on the extent and future of this industry in Minnesota is to look at related, connected, and actions that will logically follow if the industry grows. And the point that we're at in, we have some longstanding silica sand mining operations in the state, and that's well known, very successfully operating. But now we're looking at a potential for significant expansion. I think the questions that I'm unable to answer satisfactorily is, are these actions, do they have the potential to become connected in the future? So that a processing facility today that's handling X number of tons of sand might see the need for dramatic expansion in the future because of the economic realities that it would be far more efficient to use an existing processing facility rather than build additional processing facilities. And I think those are questions, as Commissioner Rothman noted, are going to occur at a local government level but without much foresight, because they're looking at their local interests primarily, and I'm concerned that we're not going to see the larger picture. So I'm very concerned that we continue to get more information about the volumes that are mined, where they're being processed, and where they're being shipped. So that I could see this map on page 35 going another level deeper and actually showing the flow of sand from the ground out of the state and to its destination. That to me would be a big step forward in trying to respond to the what does the future look like if more supply comes into the system, what would the system do with it? I think you can start to understand it if you think about that sort of flow of the material that's currently going on. So I'd like to see more about that. But again, I think this is why we set out on this document in the first place, is it sort of illustrates the gaps. And knowing that, I think it's important that we advise the local governments quickly. And Mr. Chair, when it's time and after we've heard public comment, I'll have a few questions about that.
Other comments from members of the board? Ms. Knuth?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate actually having a document at all that I can start to wrap my head around silica mining. So I think it's definitely on the right track. Just a couple small, maybe structural things. There's a lot of new words and lingo that Minnesotans are going to have to throw around, so a definition section would be really helpful for me. I was constantly trying to figure out what stuff was. I still don't know what a few of the words are. So that would be really helpful, I think, just to help people be able to have the language to talk about this new impact. And I would reiterate some of what Commissioner Stein said in terms of the importance of understanding where this is and the location. And I think the mapping project is a really, if we can figure out how to do that well, would be really useful for the state. And just, there's locations are sort of sprinkled throughout the report, and I kind of took some moving back and forth trying to figure out where this all was. I think some explicit early on, even making sort of some maps to help orient people at the beginning before you even go into the details of the report would be helpful. And then I definitely had a lot of questions about the karst. And this is a really unique part of our state in terms of the geology. And I don't know if there is more information about that. And I think it was tagged as something that we wanted more information about. And I just want to reiterate that I think that's a really important, both in terms of water impact, but in terms of the unique natural resources of our state. It's like nowhere else. And so I think that's, if you could bring that out. And there is not a section on natural resources generally. I mean, it's under governance, but kind of. So it might be useful to bring it out more explicitly as its own section, or make it clearer as its own section. I think you have air quality and water quality, but we don't have necessarily habitat, land, like kind of, I guess I'd broadly put it in natural resources.
Thank you. Mr. Landwehr?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Jeff, this is going to be similar to Ms. Knuth's comments. I think under number four, water quality, I'd hasten to add that that's also water quantity, and they do capture that in the text, but in the title, I think that's important as well. When I look on page 30, for instance, potential mining impacts on nearby water supply wells, I think we need to include impacts on surface waters as well, some mention of surface waters. And carrying that over to the next page, page 31, where we don't know cumulative impacts, it talks about water quantity and quality. I'd expand on that a little bit and ensure that we're talking about both ground and surface waters, and in particular certain, what in statute are called unique natural resource waters like trout streams, fens, and so on as a special consideration for water. So I just want to make sure that, because the cumulative impacts, I think, is one of those things that we've identified that don't get picked up by local single project permitting things, the cumulative impacts on water resources. So I'd want to see a little expansion on that. And under, Board Member Knuth's point, I think you've got Section 8, potential impacts on sensitive resources. That's primarily talks about a mapping project. So I do think that maybe that's two things, or maybe it's a recommendation, a mapping project to help identify the sensitive resources. But this is an area where there's more biological diversity than anywhere in the state. And so I think it would be worth thinking about cumulative impacts with respect to that as well. Minnesota dwarf trout lily, for instance, occurs only in Rice County, Minnesota, and if you had a bunch of operations operating there, you'd wipe out the whole planet's population. So cumulative impacts for rare species or listed species as part of that potential impacts section would be good. In the discussions we've had, I mean, I keep coming back to these three because they keep coming up, the things that we don't have enough information on that the local units of government seem to want for their EAW process. One is the cumulative impacts, the impacts on health, human health as a result of air, cumulative impacts on water, and the cumulative impacts on surface features, whether primarily talking about rare species. Those are the three things that seem to me aren't easily addressed by local units of government, and we don't have a database for. So I keep looking for those in the document.
Other comments from members? Brian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jeff, you have some statistics in the report, and the report was great, by the way. It's a great primer on silica sand mining. You have some statistics regarding frac sand or silica sand mining taking off. You've got some statistics on the mining activity in the Midwest, Southwest. You go so far as to point out the states, Illinois evidently is the number one, Texas, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Oregon, North Carolina, and California. I'm wondering if there can't be some analysis done on what we can learn from these other states. I don't have a good handle via the report on where those states stand in terms of how long they've been mining silica, whether they're experiencing the same boom that appears to be happening in Minnesota right now, whether they've had time to deal with this from a health perspective, from a water quality perspective, what their legislatures have done, what their locals have done with regard to ordinances. I guess the bottom line is an analysis of those states that are facing similar issues to that of Minnesota. Have they been facing those issues longer than we? Have they found ways to deal with them? You know, what exactly are these other states doing that we should be looking at?
Other questions? Comments? If not, members of the public, invite you to come up and bring your concerns with you. Please, Chris. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I am...
You identify yourself with...
Kristen I.D. Tollefson from Florence Township, right in the middle of frac sand country. And I just found out about this the other day, so I'm really glad it's been done and it's this far along, and that we can look not only at the information but some of the important placeholders that Jeff has created here. And I just wanted to highlight a couple of the important placeholders that I noticed. The quality of life piece is something that we're really struggling with down in Wabasha, and it's really important, and I'm grateful that it's in there. And I'm looking forward to see how that goes forward. And then the alternative proppants piece. I want to mention that there was an excellent presentation at the University of Minnesota's Silica Sand Conference on alternative proppants. And I hope maybe that information can be incorporated, because it talked about how as we get further and further into the fracking sites, that you go deeper and deeper and you need harder and harder proppants, and eventually we're going to be using the more expensive ceramic proppants. And so, of course, in Southeast, we really wish we would use the ceramic proppants instead of tear up the hills. But that's really an important piece. I also wanted to mention, I'm very, very glad to see this mapping piece going forward. And I wanted to mention, as you may know, that our county, Goodhue County, has been doing an environmental land use sensitivity mapping. I guess Olmsted has a very good mapping system, and Florence Township has been working on this and trying to do somewhat the same thing, figure out how these two pieces interconnect. In the mapping, I would specifically like to see that the maps include some of the sensitive features, which are the cultural, archaeological, the resources for which people come to our part of the state. And these things are mappable. You know, there are maps, and the I believe that the Minnesota-Mississippi River Parkway Commission, in the context of the Great River Road, study, the corridor plan, I think there is a great deal of material in there that would be very important to have on the map. So that's my comment.
Thank you very much. Any questions for comments for Chris? Seeing none, thank you very
thank
much,
you.
Chris. Anyone else in the audience that cares to come up and comment? Tony? Welcome, Tony.
I'll bite, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Kulos. I'm the Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and I want to thank staff. They've done obviously tremendous job here putting together a lot of information on the industry, but I wanted to remind members, too, that this industry just didn't pop up in 2012. This industry has been ongoing in the state for 100 years plus. So I would encourage them to also look at areas where it has been successful in the state and successfully regulated by the local industry, governmental units, whether it's cities or counties or state involvement. And so I would encourage look out to be where it has been successfully permitted and those operations are working. And number two, to also reach out to the industry. If there's some information you need in terms of, jobs, and we talked about some of the other economic impacts that's been talked about here, if I need to be the go-between to connect people to the industry, but if you need the economic impacts or some of the connections going there, I would encourage staff to reach out to the industry if they have any questions there, and I would be more than happy to help you on that.
Any questions for Tony? Not, thank you very much. Did somebody else want to? Okay. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Winston Kaler.
Hi, Winston.
I come from Red Wing, Minnesota, which is a community that is very concerned with the issue that you are considering here. And I had not planned on commenting today. I will be honest and say I have not seen or read the report that is the subject of discussion.
But I bet you have personal experience, though, huh?
Oh, I do.
Okay.
Definitely. I hope that will be of some value or interest to you. As a lifelong resident of Red Wing, Minnesota and southeastern Minnesota, I feel that we are not looking at an industry that is based on historical precedents, as the preceding speaker urged you to think. I think this is going to be a completely new industry by virtue of its very large scale. It is going to be, let's face it, essentially controlled by interests that are outside of the state of Minnesota. And we must stand up for ourselves. That's my first point. Second point is I believe that it is important not to engage in excessive duplication of efforts. That if the state government is going to take a role in this whole issue, that the state government should act in a coordinated fashion and not have certain groups, as this being the Environmental Quality Board representing the interests of the environment, other parts of the government representing economic interests, doing their work to promote their interests, and all of these conflicting interests working, not necessarily conflicting, but not related interests or uncoordinated interests working parallel. Meanwhile, those who are bringing the big money in, money talks, let's face it, and that, I think, is what we have to watch out for. And I've been very heartened to hear that there is significant concern on the board for the long-range effects of this whole issue that is being considered. And as somebody who has been a part of this area of the state for well nigh close to 70 years now, I think that
you're not 70 years old.
I'm getting there. I'm very close. Right. But I like to think that there will be values considered other than the purely economic values.
Well, I want to remind you, Winston, that we are not operating in a vacuum just from an environmental perspective. That's the reason why there are commissioners from literally all the agencies representing the administration here at the table. And so
right.
We each bring a unique perspective. Commissioner Rothman brings clearly a unique perspective along with Commissioner Landwehr. And so that hopefully is a positive thing in terms of representation around this table. Just for the heck of it, I thought I'd throw that in.
Thank you. And on my way here, I was hearing reports of the president's remarks on the whole issue of gun violence, mm-hmm. which, of course, also involves a lot of different interests, but that we have to look at the long-term prospects for what will this region, this, to me, very precious region mm-hmm. of Minnesota, look like 100 years from now if we act in certain ways now. That is to say, will we... I forget who it was that said something about we don't want the mining economy to overwhelm the local economy. And
Ever-quotable Commissioner Rothman.
Well, for that I am most grateful, and I hope you will take his words to heart.
Sure will.
And treat, in this case, local interests are, in fact, the interests of the world and long-range future of the world, I think, more than will we have $3 gasoline for the next 10 years or not.
Thank you. Questions for Winston? If not, thank you for taking the time to drive up today. Appreciate it. Other comments or questions as it relates to the report? I see, Jeff, you were taking furious notes, and I suspect that many of, if not rather all of the issues brought up here you'll try to incorporate as we move ahead with further refining the report. One thing I might suggest, and that is that much of the information that we get is from the paper. With the reports that have been coming out over the last 2 months, the Tribune, Star Tribune, those reports have been the source of much information. But I'm wondering, Ellen and I have had a discussion about this, and wondering if there's a possibility and that the staff, all two of you, I'm really reluctant to put this out there, but could provide some ongoing information as we move into the legislative session, maybe on a weekly basis, what you're hearing. It can be as simple as cut and paste and ship it over, but somebody to be really drilling down on, pardon the pun here, the frac sand mining issue. And if you could do that, I think it would be appreciated by all of us to add to our library of information that we already have. Don't hate me.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Board, I'd never hate you. We'll do what we can. I am not going to promise something on that. Unfortunately, we don't have two people working on silica sand. Mm-hmm. You know, we have some significant other duties to do, and I hate to repeat that to people when they call on the phone, but we'll do what we can. We'll see what we can
do. I'm thinking of maybe a person or two behind you that might be willing to. Anna Sherman, I'm looking at you.
So she has plenty of spare time, too, right?
She does. She's our specialist.
I think it's a wonderful idea. It really is a resource commitment question, and we'll see what we can do.
I understand.
We'll see what
that
we can do.
We'll
see what we can do. Yeah.
Mr. Chair?
Please. Commissioner Stein?
You know, I wanted to return. The public, many people come and attend these meetings, and the issue was originally brought before the board because people were concerned about the pace of the potential growth in the industry and concern over environmental effects and consequences, and people asked for a generic environmental impact statement. Part of what we had the staff do was to put together this document as a starting point to address what's known and what's not known. And I think I just want to have – I want to come back to that original question. Does the idea of a generic environmental impact statement have merit? Are there other ideas that we want to explore and entertain and really press forward with, because I think the communities, some communities are faced with decisions that they can't wait, or if they do wait, will have other consequences. We explored this conversation, a number of us, in public and in private conversation. I just want to be, I think it's time to come back on the record. We have some ongoing environmental review in a couple of projects in Winona County that, rightfully so, under the rules, the board directed those petitions for environmental review to the county as the responsible governmental unit. As I see the information come forward and I hear where the concerns of the citizens and community members, I have some questions now about, we're in the midst of progress. If you're a local business owner and you're trying to get permitted, we have growing concerns, questions perhaps is a better way of looking at it. What is the board's authority to intervene? This is a question for our legal counsel, and I don't know if our legal counsel is here anymore, but
I'll go get her.
I'm concerned. I want to understand what possible actions the board might take to intervene again in local decisions that are ongoing, whether the board would need additional authority to do that, or if the board were to do nothing, what the path to decisions looks like on those two projects that are currently undergoing environmental review. Now, I know there are some processing facilities that are being built or expanded, and those are, I consider, in the pipeline of construction. But there are some mining facilities that are under review, and those two in Winona County, I've got the copy of the EAWs in front of me, that were released on the Dobbelstein Quarry and the Nisbet Mine. And these two environmental assessment worksheets are out for public review right now. And I'm interested in helping the conversation along with those local units of government. So I don't want to ramble any further. I'm just looking for options to explore.
Ramble just a second or two more until legal counsel can catch her breath, and then maybe you can restate your.
So my concern, Mr. Chair, is as information comes in and we gather it more fully, we learn more. Additional questions are asked about the extent of future mining operations, hauling operations, and how those actions may or may not be related or connected. I'm in this quandary of, we've got pending environmental assessment worksheets on the table for two projects that I debate whether or not we are seeing all the issues clearly relative to related actions. And what's the board's authority to intervene or act independently of those local government decisions that have now started down a path? They've been put on that path by the board, by the board's decision to assign them the responsible governmental unit authority. Are there options that we have? So that's a question to our executive director, perhaps, and our legal counsel.
I'm going to actually first start with a question to staff a factual question of whether these two quarries in Winona County, were those petitioned or were those mandatory categories?
There's a little mixture of both. There's actually another one going on as well. Winona County's getting whacked pretty hard right now. There are two that are on notice, one that's about to go on notice. I don't remember the names of them. Kate probably does, if the details are really of interest to the board. So not only that, but isn't do they also have a processing site in question? There's so many of these things going on right now that I'm really losing track of them personally.
Kate.
Board Chair, members of the board, my name is Kate France. I don't know if I've gotten to sit in front of you yet.
Right. You know, you haven't, haven't you? You had your designated hitter here.
Right, right. So just to clarify, Winona County currently is facing decisions on three different EAWs. The Yoder and the Dabblestein EAWs are currently on notice. The Nisbet mine will be on notice as of this coming Monday. The Yoder and the Dabblestein were voluntary EAWs, as in the responsible government unit worked with the project proposer who elected to initiate these EAWs of their accord. Now, there were some situations that were a little bit out of the ordinary, which meant that once the process started, then the RGU needed to make the determination that the process needed to be completed. There was some discussion about whether the project proposer could terminate that process after it was initiated, but it was determined that the RGU wanted to complete that process, so they are still currently on notice. The Nisbet mine was due to a petition that the EQB did receive and determined that the county was the appropriate RGU.
Okay. Thank you.
So, Commissioner Sain.
Yep, that's helpful, and I'm just looking at some. I have a copy of a letter from Winona County Planning and Environmental Services that talks about connected actions, and they talk about the Dabblestein, Yoder, and then if I add in Nisbet, it looks like there's 140 acres plus or minus total, and the mandatory category for an EIS is 160 acres, and that would appear to answer what's on the table in Winona County right now. What's always of interest is how projects are brought forward, at what time, how they're understood by all the parties involved. I know from past experience on private land development how land developers choose the number of houses and the number of acres, and in order to avoid certain mandatory categories, that's understandable. I'm still looking for legal counsel or advice on the interest of having a more comprehensive look at the future of mining. If I just said Winona County, I'm close to 160 acres right now, and all it would take is another 20-acre mine site to come forward for us to say now with that one, it would have been connected and potentially exceed the EIS category. An EIS is obviously a more thorough investigation of potential impacts. So I'm still looking for opportunities we have to intervene or inject a broader conversation over the local unit of government's conversation.
Mr. Chair, may I take a moment to give a non-legal opinion just in terms of how you know a lot about how these things work, but I'll just for the board's benefit, staff, the EQB's backing up, the environmental review rules since 1982, before 1982, the Environmental Quality Board did all environmental review in the state. And so there were some very significant decisions made in rulemaking, and the big rule, mother of all rulemaking for the environmental review is in 1982, where the state made a very conscious decision to go to a system where there was an assignment of responsible governmental units to do environmental review either through the rule or through processes that are outlined in the statutes. And I think part of that decision was that the Environmental Quality Board found itself overwhelmed, basically, with the task of doing environmental review, and realized that it was really
pretty much impractical for it to do environmental review. So that's a just a big background piece there for this question. So the board's role generally in environmental review, I mean, it really breaks down to writing the rules for environmental, how environmental review is done, and then providing guidance to parties that are out there on environmental review, providing guidance to the responsible governmental units, to project proposers, to citizens, to anybody that needs it. And there's a lot of written guidance that's been prepared that's on the web now. And a lot of the other jobs that Kate and Jeff wind up being absorbed in on a day-to-day basis are answering sometimes very minute, detailed questions on specific projects and the application of the environmental review rules, including these cases that you're talking about right now. Kate and Jeff, probably mostly Kate, have spent hours talking with the county and with others about these cases. Other agencies, of course, get involved as well. I know in the case of these mines, the Pollution Control Agency wrote comment letters that express some of the concerns that are being expressed by the commissioner today about these. So there are various ways that the local government, the responsible governmental units, get advice, and of course the decisions are up to them and their legal counsel. And as I think the letter you were referring to, Commissioner Stein, I read that as well. The staff went through its own analysis of whether these were phased or connected actions and consulted with counsel and provided a report to the county board that the county board took into account in making decisions on how to proceed with the environmental review in these matters. So a long way of saying that, the role of the board for the most part is to provide support, assistance, but the rules really are strongly in favor of the fact that that these decisions are the decisions of the responsible governmental units, and the board really has an extremely limited role in intervening in any particular matter. That being said, there have been very limited instances historically where the board has intervened, and I can only think of one right now where there was a citizen lawsuit and the board was asked to intervene as a friend of the court, an amicus, and the board chose to do so it was a board decision to do that, to intervene, and it did, and so EQB staff and legal counsel prepared briefs in that matter. And I'm blanking on what matter it was, but I could look that up for you if you'd be interested. That's the only instance I'm aware of the board intervening in a matter, and it's a very serious matter. I'm going to say one more thing. There is language in the rule having to do, and I don't believe it would be applicable to any case that's ongoing that environmental review has begun. But prior to environmental review occurring, there is an opportunity for there is language in the rule that authorizes the board itself to initiate environmental review as a discretionary environmental review. I have never seen that exercised. And obviously that, in terms of what I just talked about, in terms of the way the system is set up for responsible governmental units, it obviously sets up a precedential question for the board.
Bob, do you know what citation that is?
Unfortunately, I don't have my book in front of me. I believe it's in 1000.
Mr. Chairman,
you have
which,
it?
Which
citation? This is the discretionary. Oh, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
4410.1000, subpart 3, discretionary.
I knew that.
Yep. Paragraph C,
Yep.
And it says that if the EQB determines that that because of the nature or location of a proposed project, the project may have the potential for significant environmental effects, they can require a discretionary EAW. But it also says that it does not apply if the local governmental unit has already made a determination about whether there has to be environmental review.
Right. So in other words, if by the process of assigning a responsible unit of government, and the EQB board, after the fact, determines that the responsible unit of government did not act responsibly, that's just tough?
Mr. Chair, members, but not quite. There's three places where the EQB can step into the process, any of the environmental review process. One, reassigning the RGU. Two, completely separate, determining, as Ellen has laid out, that a discretionary EAW is warranted, if you will, on a particular project. Three.
And after the fact, you could.
Before. No, before anybody else makes a decision on it. Yeah.
So back to my original question, after the decisions have been made and the board sits around and said, you know, I think they acted hastily or irresponsibly, that ship has sailed?
That ship has sailed unless the board wants to bring action in court, for which we have the same right as any other citizen or entity in the state. The third thing, other than suing, which I guess the fourth would be the EQB can step in on the decision of the adequacy of an environmental impact statement. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing, where another RGU has prepared an EIS, the EQB has the authority to step in and say, this is not adequate. You have to keep doing work. I can't remember the citation right now. It's a section adequacy of an EIS, wherever that is. But those are the only four things specifically, and one of them is sue.
Maybe just one other thing that just
Ellen?
That sort of general authority. Thank you.
Is EQB general authority under 4410.0400, subpart 1, the EQB shall monitor the effectiveness of these sections and shall take appropriate measures to modify and improve their effectiveness. The EQB shall assist governmental units and interested persons in understanding and implementing the rules. And Bob's indicated sort of what the past history of that has been, but of course you could interpret that in a more broad way if you chose to, I would think.
Thank you, Ellen. Questions, comments?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And That's helpful because I've read the rules. I've read the rules many times in my life, but I do think it's important for the citizens interested in this to understand what we're dealing with, that there's a process that defines everyone's boundaries. However, I don't want to be limited by that existing regulation if there are other possibilities, and I think we should again ask ourselves what the other possibilities might be. And we've heard about those. We've heard about designating a critical area. We have heard about issuing some kind of guidance to local units of government. We've heard about taking some action in other venues, whether that be in the legislature or in other audiences. And so I think to the extent people have given that any thought, I'd welcome that conversation at the board. I think that's what the board exists to do, is to respond to the citizens who brought the issue before us and work together to figure out what the better path to address those concerns might be, if there is one. Understanding we have a legal system in place that guides our future actions. So I'm just looking to the board for additional comment on the merit of other strategies.
Ellen?
Jeff pointed out the other rule that he mentioned, so maybe I'll just point that out.
Thank you.
Sorry. Rule 4410.2800 that Jeff was mentioning about adequacy, and I think it's just helpful to point this out too, because it says the EQB shall intervene only if the EQB, and this is after a final EIS mm-hmm. has been issued. Only if the RGU is or will be unable to provide an objective appraisal of the potential impacts of the project, or the, I think that's an or, the project involves complex issues which the RGU lacks the technical ability to assess, or the project has multi-jurisdictional effects. And so those are certainly criteria that could potentially apply in some case. I don't know. It's just something that we should familiarize ourselves with.
Again, that's in the section of the rule dealing with the adequacy of a final EIS, correct?
Exactly. Yeah. So.
Right. There's one more public comment that's waiting in the wings, and I'd like to ask Jody McElrath to come up and welcome Jody again. Nice to see you. Maybe you could identify yourself also for
sure.
The
sure. Jody McElrath. I'm a planning commissioner at Florence Township, and I'm also the chairman of the Save the Bluff Citizens Group in Goodhue County. And I wanted to mention when I believe I heard that most of the information you're getting about sand mining is coming through the Star Tribune, that if you just Google Save the Bluffs, all one word, we have a complete bibliography of studies that have been accumulated not only by ourselves and Save the Bluffs, but by our constituents all the way down to through Fillmore County. And it's not a bunch of emotional stuff. It is all studies and facts. So I invite all of you board members to Google Save the Bluffs, and in the literature section, you'll find probably more than you've ever wanted to know.
Jody, for the record, I may have overstated that.
And so I truly invite you to do that and take advantage of what we've done so far in the last 2 years. Secondly, the local governments, I believe, being, you know, on a planning commission, need a little bit of state muscle in this issue. And I'll cite the example that the city of Wabasha was intimidated via a lawsuit threat for not demanding an EAW. And in that regard, when we talk about EAWs or just environmental impact studies, those are project by project. Those are not a cumulative impact like a GEIS would be for, let's say, the southeastern region of the state. And I would beg the question that if our friends in western Wisconsin had the opportunity of a GEIS before 109 mines and processing sites sprung up over the last 3 years, I think that they would have a whole different look to what they've allowed in those communities. You know, just in speaking with the citizens and other local government units over there. And then, again, as I say, the cumulative impact cannot be stressed enough. Because of the location of the sand, the best possible sand is in the worst possible locations down the river valley. And with that comes the transportation, the traffic issues, the environmental issues, the tourism issues that will be compounded, as I say, as these sites would spring up, especially if they spring up with the speed that they've done in Wisconsin. So that's what I had to say.
Thank you, Jody.
Thank you.
Questions for Jody?
I did have one question. If I could ask, the organization that you referred to, Save the Bluffs, is that volunteers?
Yes, it's all citizens group, and we are fortunate to have a host of very intelligent, talented people that have been able to come together to, for example, create the website. Mm-hmm. But it's all volunteer.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ellen, sure.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Just the other comment I wanted to make, and when you were talking, Mr. Chair, about providing information, and Anna and I have been trying to track some of the sources of information that are out there, and we'd be happy to share them with the board if people are willing to have a lot more emails coming their way. But the other thing I really wanted to emphasize was that I think, especially in light of the governor's concern that the industry not get ahead of us without us having a clear path for what the state wants to do or to know, I thought that it would be helpful to have Commissioners Stein and Landwehr in particular, along with to assign your permitting staff along with our EQB staff and ourselves, just to track what projects are in the pipeline. I think that's where we don't all have a good, clear sense of that information. And if the EQB wants to continue to monitor where the projects are that are coming up, it would be helpful to all have that same information. And permitting staff has a lot more knowledge about that in some cases. Mm-hmm. EQB staff knows some, and your staff knows some. I think that would be helpful if the whole board would have regular reports on that information so we can track the progress.
Commissioners.
Mr. Chair, I just want to concur first with Commissioner Stein, but also with Ellen. I had that thought in my mind. I think it's important for us to be tracking those projects. So I think it's a great suggestion and be helpful. And then just to follow up with what Jody was saying, I think that even though we may have individual RGUs in various places that are happening, there is a more global or statewide interest in knowing. We're having a broader question in public policy and understanding. So, you know, we shouldn't. I'd add to your question, which is not just intervention in these particular proceedings or RGUs, but is there, you know, the GIS or whatever, and revisit that issue so that we, you know what our options are.
Yep. Okay. Other comments or questions, Commissioner Landwehr?
Mr. Chair, and maybe Bob, I've got this vintage copy of the rules, so I don't know if that's up to date or not. But according to this, you know, publication of, and distribution of EAW, we should each be getting copies of EAWs as they're proposed. So I presume that the majority of the projects that we're interested in, we should be getting some information on. Ellen mentioned. Permits. We don't get into the permitting until after the EAW is done, and the permits are required. And some projects could conceivably get done without permits because they don't affect water, they don't affect air, or whatever. So I'm wondering what is the best vehicle to sort of capture the projects that are on the horizon.
Bob,
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Landwehr, I don't know what the best vehicle is. When there are environmental review actions and goes through the monitor, we do get copies of those things, and those things are somewhat tracked and probably could come up with some way of summarizing those types of things to the board.
There, the rule incidentally says that each of the individual members should be getting a copy of the EAW. I don't know if that's been.
I think the member agencies are, yes.
It says each individual member, so I presume the citizen members as well.
Ah, interesting. Well, we will revisit that as well.
And it doesn't say it has to come from you. It says it's supposed to come from
RGU. They'd be on the mailing list then.
Right.
Yeah. In terms of, but of course there are projects that don't require environmental review and those types of things. Those would be the things that are a little more difficult to track. But and Jeff, I think, wanted to speak to this.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, first of all, yeah, the RGU is responsible for distributing copies of the EAWs to the agency contacts, the agency contacts. And there's a distribution list that's maintained by the EQB, and the RGU sends out copies.
I'm looking at 44.10.15. At the time of submission of the EAW to the EQB staff, the RGU shall also submit one copy of the EAW to it. Lists a long list of recipients, but the first is each member of the EQB.
Yeah, well, that's a new one. I don't think that's ever been done other than in the rules. It's the MEPA says shall maintain a list, or the rule says shall maintain a list, and there is a distribution list that's been used. Individual members of the EQB, does that mean the agencies, or does that mean the board members? That's where it's a little mushy. So the substitute for that.
John should be getting one, I guess, is the way I read it. And since he's an individual citizen, it's not going to go to an agency.
We may have to change the distribution list to incorporate that. We'll check that.
This isn't a rule, Jeff, and this isn't something that you as an EQB staffer are required to do. It's something the RGU is required to do, subject to the rule.
Right. Well, we'll check into that and see, because people do call us for guidance.
You could assign a staff person to do that.
Yeah, we've got some hanging out in
one of the many.
One thing I would like to say is on this collection and distribution of environmental documents and projects and things, you might recall when we went through the executive order piece on improving environmental review, the number one recommendation out of that was put together a database for tracking these things, because right now there is no system for tracking it. And don't have a lot of, you know, administrative staff to be putting out letters and filing things. It's actually sort of a mess just because there's no resources to do it. So we would love to be able to do that, but it's just not happening.
Eric?
Well, just real quickly, I wanted to speak to the point you made. Summer of 2011, I did receive an EAW in the mail.
Oh, really? Okay.
Really?
Yep, to my personal address.
What time of the day was that? Very good.
No man arrived that day, I
can
tell you.
Yeah,
but I'm just saying.
You might be worried about that. I don't know. Somebody's got your address, you know.
Well, it's there on the website anyways.
Commissioner Stein?
Just to the question of can we organize our information across environmental reviews and permitting more effectively, let me talk to staff in our agency about heading that up so we can see if it's possible, how we might do that, and who the right. I think we know who the group of people are who know what the projects are out there. So I think we could take a lead on that, and identify a way to get it updated. But I will do that quickly.
Okay. We can do the same. And I'm looking at Anna, who has been diligent about putting information together, and I know you will continue to do that. So.
I don't know. It's just a suggestion, too, for the non-environmental review projects, if there are any. I don't know if transportation has information, too, or, you know. There might be other agencies with information, with knowledge about what activities out there. Plus, we should reach out to the groups that are interested in all these projects, and they would have a lot of information as well.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, one of the things that is I'm seeing coming out of this discussion is just more evidence of one of the sources of confusion and anxiety about the whole industrial silica sand industry. Something that is described in the draft report, but it's been pointed out to me it should be made more prominent. It's not just mines, you know? Everybody thinks about the mines. One of the things that's really hard to grasp is you've got mines, you've got processing facilities, and you've got the transportation between them and transportation between the processing facilities and the actual petroleum fracking sites elsewhere in the country and Canada and so on. And all of these are different things, different facilities that have potentially different impacts on their surroundings, although there is some overlap, you know, is the air quality is the big one that it could, you know, cross all these things. But some of the facilities will have the processing facility on the mining site. Some of the mines will have railroad tracks running by. Some of the processing facilities will have railroad tracks. Some of them just have to truck. Some of them have to truck between the mine and the processing site, and then from the processing site to a railroad loading facility where it gets on the rail, or a barge loading facility. It's really a whole bunch of different moving parts, and that's something that's come out of this that makes it really, really complicated. You know, what are the impacts? Well, the impacts of what? The mine, the processing, you know, the washing and processing site, the trains going by people's yards, the trucks going down Main Street, let alone the question, is there an impact? You know, that's if so, I mean, the is there an impact? Well, of what? Of these different things? Well, of course, and each one of those have to be pulled out. There's all these different strands. So it's, and I can see that coming out. We're asking about the different facilities in Winona County, the one in the city of Wabasha, where they decided, their city attorney concluded that federal railroad authority rules over what would be the word preempted. Thank you. The city's ability to require an EAW under state law, but did not preempt the city's zoning authority. That one leaves this city planner's brain bouncing around in circles. I mean, what preempts state law but not local law, since local law is enabled by state statute? That one's got me totally confused, but I'm not an attorney and I'm not going to certainly question. But those are some of the confusing aspects of things that are going around. Nothing's easy with any of this, just nothing's easy. And that's just adds to the concern of the residents, the industry people, and you.
Yep. All right. Again, thank you, Jeff. Any other, Commissioner Stein, you asked about, you know, feelings around this table, and I suspect that they will range from a very aggressive approach on frac sand mining all the way to a non-aggressive approach on frac sand mining or silica sand mining. And it's our responsibility, I believe, to move this process forward, to certainly acknowledge all of the concerns. We do have a petition in front of us that we haven't really acted on yet. But we also want to point out that the governor is very concerned, is not at all interested in seeing irreparable damage done to any part of that sensitive area, southeastern Minnesota. And so with that in mind, I think our obligation, and certainly our obligation to the governor and to folks that are here today, is to examine as best we can all aspects. And you've done a nice job of laying out those specific areas. And so, again, that's our job, and we plan to do it. So at the risk of losing members, we have one more item. And I see, Commissioner Stein, you're packing your bags. I hope you'll just hang in for a few more minutes. I'm going to pass up the opportunity to greet the Senate Ag Committee that is touring our lab and building today, just to make sure that we finish our work here today. So hopefully you can hang in. I'd like to invite Alan Anderson to come up and give us an update on the Environmental Congress, if you would, please, and anything else that you have on the agenda. Alan has been working feverishly on a variety of agenda items, and thank you for being here today, Alan.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I think I just want to give a brief update. I can do this in 5 or 10 minutes, but hopefully get a little bit of feedback if you have time to offer some. That would be great and helpful. So just to start, again, the citizen forums were very successful, and I want to thank all of you for your help and support, your help with staff, and with your participation. That was really a big part of what made them so successful. And as I think Mr. Chair said, there were over 1,200 citizens participating. So in terms of follow-up from the citizen forums, briefly what our plan is to have, we have a team of staff that are working on processing all of the information that came from the forums, and that's pages and pages and pages of notes from breakout sessions, polling data, citizen comment cards, and online input. So we have lots and lots of data to process. Cindy Carlson from MnDOT is leading that effort, and we'll put together a report. We also have acquired an intern who's a graduate student at the Humphrey Institute, who we have asked, who's really got a lot of background in doing this sort of thing, who's going to help us with the processing. She's going to offer about 15 hours a week. So that will be very helpful to process the information. First, what we intend to do is compile it just so we have the raw data, and then put it into a report that will reflect the overall themes and priorities that can be culled from that information. Both of those products will be put online and be available to the public. So we think it's really important to have all of that information made public, but we specifically intend to have a presentation at the Environmental Congress that will be kind of the starting point for the discussion at the Environmental Congress, which will be the compilation of the themes and priorities that we've gotten from the citizens for their input. Secondly, in terms of the Environmental Congress planning, so we've tried to move ahead with a plan for the Congress. We haven't had a lot of specific planning before now because we were wrapped up with organizing the forums. I appreciate many of you, most of you, responded to my request for some feedback on some key questions. That was very, very helpful. I can't say that everybody, there was a clear consensus from all of that information, so it's been, we don't have clear direction on everything, but we did have a subcommittee meeting, a Congress subcommittee meeting last week of the EQB, and that helped us to arrive at some recommended consensus items. So let me just go through those quickly. First of all, I should say that we do have a date and a venue, which you all know by now. I think March 15th at the Ramada at the Mall of America is where the forum will be held, and it's the former Thunderbird Hotel, which some of you may be familiar with, but recently remodeled.
I remember the bar there.
I think the bar's still there. So at the subcommittee, we talked about some of the issues and some of the key decision items that we wanted to ask for feedback on. What's the objective? What are the desired outcomes of the March event, the one-day Congress event, which we've called the statewide Congress? How many attendees should we have, and who should they be? And guidance as to the program. And we did have a pretty clear consensus from the subcommittee that the statewide Congress is not intended to be the seventh citizen forum. It's intended to be different and go sort of to the next step of the process of collecting input and refining that and interpreting that, synthesizing that for the benefit of the EQB in making its recommendations to the governor and for the administration. So let me jump ahead. So what we came up with for a proposed objective, and this is wordsmithed by a committee, engage knowledgeable citizen leaders of Minnesota in refining and prioritizing citizen input, which will help guide the EQB in addressing Minnesota's present and future environmental and energy challenges and opportunities. And so the concept of knowledgeable citizen leaders is important because we've had quite a bit of direction about collecting a group of experts and leaders around the state as the core participants in the Congress to take the citizen input and further refine that. In terms of desired outcomes, this is our effort at trying to summarize what the subcommittee suggested for desired outcomes. First, measurable goals for the future that will help Minnesota achieve a long-term vision for the environment. That's kind of the big picture. As well as a narrowed down, prioritized list of action items that the citizen leaders at the Congress recommend to the EQB. So it would be sort of the long-term vision and the short-term action steps that would be refined from the report card and the citizen forums by experts and citizen leaders. I already said that, not intended to be a seventh citizen forum, intended to be key leaders and experts. Just as a reminder, what the statute says about the Congress. The statute, way back in the 1970s when this was written, says that the board shall convene at its discretion an annual Congress, and it lays out all the broad collection of different sectors and voices that need to be represented at this event, not including but not limited to representatives of state, federal, and regional agencies or governments, I would say, citizen organizations, associations, industries of the private sector, colleges and universities, which we take to mean not just academics and scientists and professors and experts, but also students who represent the next generation, and private enterprises who are active in or have a major impact on environmental quality. So that's a very broad spectrum of Minnesotans that we want to try to include in this event. So we've already asked all of you to suggest people or organizations that you would like to put on a list as a starting point for people to invite. If you ask organizations, we can ask organization leaders, and organization is a very broad term that covers all of those different categories, you know, from the legislature to an NGO to a business leader. We can ask them to designate a certain number of people to attend.
But we still have some rather difficult questions in front of us. We talked about numbers of attendees, and we talked about numbers in the – well, we've heard all different numbers in the feedback that we got from all of you, so I hesitate to even put numbers out there yet until I hear what you all have to say today. But we talked about 250, 300, or more. Some people talked about 400 or 800. So I think the biggest challenge that we have is how to balance that really selective group of experts and leaders that we want at the table to take this to the next step of input for the benefit of the EQB's decision making, but also to balance that with the groundswell of public involvement and interest in this Congress that we've had. Because we know that a lot of people across the state who participated in the forums or heard about the forums think this is going to be a really, really big event, and they want to participate. So we have to figure that out to balance public expectations with our desire to have a really core group that meets our expectations. So I'd love your comment. If anyone has additional thoughts about that. The last thing that the subcommittee talked about was the idea of sponsors, and I think the way we left it was we just weren't comfortable with asking for sponsors that because there's a whole range of issues that potential sponsors from all different sectors could have an interest in some of the decisions and topics that are being debated, and it might be simpler just to keep it government-financed only. So finally, we talked about ideas for how to do a format of the event, and we have discussed having panels that would be based on the report card topics, and it could be four or five panels. Potentially, we could combine a couple of the topics from the report card: water, land, air, energy, and climate. A couple of those could possibly be combined. We've talked about having panelists of experts. And their job would be to first react to the findings of the citizen forums that we'll present, and number two, present a vision for the future in that issue area, and then to take that to a level of engagement with the attendees, whether through questions and answers and discussion, clicker polling again, et cetera. And we're working on putting together the exact engagement plan. And then we've also discussed having a keynote speaker or two, including, of course, Governor Dayton, who we'd love to have come if he's able to, but perhaps a national speaker of some note if people think that would be valuable. I guess we've gotten different views on that, whether that would be important. Maybe I should pause there and see, or I can finish my whole, I just had a couple other things I wanted. Maybe I'll just finish. Oh, whatever you want.
Are they on a different issue?
Yeah.
Related. Okay. Any comments at this point regarding the I was part of that subcommittee, and it was an interesting process to go through, and particularly wordsmithing at the committee level, as I know Kate would probably agree, is always very difficult. But I thought it came out very well. And once we settled on the word synthesize. Questions or comments? We did have a serious discussion about just throwing the door open and with the anticipation that you could have 1,500 people show up or 1,000 people show up. But then again, the issue of whether we're talking about a seventh meeting was kind of brought to the forefront and felt not, and that this discussion should be for thought leaders, if that's a proper word, or at least the thought leader should be there to provide to sort of set the table, and that the policymakers should be there to listen and to get a sense of what's coming down the road. Brian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was also at the subcommittee meeting, and I think one of the important things that occurred was the developing that objective statement. I think once we develop that objective statement, once we developed that objective, it became clear that this could not be as large a group as the facility was able to accommodate. It had a couple of rooms, 800 people per room. And I think it was clear that the group was leaning towards a smaller number of people. You know, that I think you threw out the number 300 or so. What I was wondering is, I think we've probably all seen the legislature in action. There's closed caption TVs or something like that. And then I think we've probably all seen public TV where a group of people are being interviewed, usually legislators, and then callers are able to get a question to the moderator in some form or fashion. I'm just curious if that might be an option to engage people that wish to be involved, but, you know, they can't be involved because of the size of the venue. I'm just curious if that's any option at all.
Yeah, I suppose we could join the century in terms of the use of technology, I imagine.
Television is actually old.
Golly. We have a TV.
Yeah, I think, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Knapstad, absolutely. We have the capability to do that at this venue, to do various sorts of, well, we might have to partner with some kind of cable or nonprofit group that does videography, but we have a lot of AV capabilities at the venue. So I think it's possible to do that. And you're right that I think there was a strong feeling that we should try to limit the size of this. I think I'm just concerned about the public expectation out there and how we manage that and how we give every Minnesotan a chance to somehow play a role in this. I'm not sure what it is, and that would be one way to do that.
But mm-hmm. achieve the objective at the yep. same time. Uh-huh. You simply can't do that in one day with, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people.
Mm-hmm. We got this thing called the intern. It's a bunch of pipes that kind of come together. And
something like that.
Yeah, we could do that, I think. So perfect. All right. Any other questions or comments about the process we're going through right now to
Mr. Chair?
Yes, please, Commissioner.
Only just one idea here. If you really want to try to convene the thought leaders, knowledge experts, maybe a roundtable format where you kind of select who's all involved in that roundtable, make sure that you have some real experts sitting around that table, but then you have room for audience members to, of course, be there raising questions, engaging mm-hmm. in that way. Maybe that could help further the discussion.
We were sort of visioning, this is maybe two or three or four panels.
Yeah.
Here, and then maybe one main speaker, somebody of some national, international acclaim. We actually talked about Ken Salazar, and I think I heard on the radio today he is ending his public career and going back to Colorado. So it might be a good time to catch him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, his calendar should be open now. So I agree, and we thought maybe something like that might be workable, a panel, and then on top of that, somebody to moderate that panel like you. Now, listen, you can't lay this out here and then run. You know that, yeah. So, okay, fine.
5 minutes.
Yes. All right, thank you. Ellen,
is there anything else? Let me just a couple other quick updates, and then I'll be done. We had talked over the last few months about the idea of the Next Generation Congress, and we've planted a seed with some college-age students and asked them, and they have taken it and run with it, and they're very excited about planning some sort of event, which will be, again, for the purpose of providing input to the EQB for helping us create, or the EQB creating this blueprint, this vision, and this priority list of actions. And they are looking at doing a February event. We've, in the past, so far we've assisted them on an ad hoc basis. We've provided some advice and mentoring, and we have an intern that's working with under my supervision that is from the University of Minnesota Morris, who is helping do student outreach. And
I think some of you met her. One of the six meetings that we've had across Minnesota.
Yeah, she's great. And we're excited that they want to move forward. And two things on that. One is that we are talking about trying to make sure that they have a voice at the Congress, so the next generation is represented there. And that will help with the age diversity in the room. And we also are proposing that we could provide a small financial support for them to do their gathering, because we want to encourage them to do this, connecting and convening and really grappling with some of the same issues that we're grappling with at the forums and the Congress. The University of Minnesota has given them a $500 grant, and we wanted to ask if the board would be supportive of doing that as well to help them pay the expenses of their Congress or their next generation gathering. And that leads me to the last item very quickly. Some quick budget updates. We don't really, because we don't have a final plan to present you as to how many people will be at the event and how many meals that represents, we can't give you a final budget impact yet. We'll do that as soon as we can. But in terms of short-term items that we would like to have EQB consensus on, hopefully, it's not an action item. We just want to notify you of this, I guess, is to extend Anna Sherman's position. She's been an invaluable part of our team and has done an amazing amount of work to help. And her position expires in February, and we want to extend her till June. And so that would be a four-month extension, roughly. We have the intern at the Humphrey Institute that we have to pay a stipend to for up to 15 hours a week for the next 12 weeks or so. And finally, the Next Generation Congress. And so if you would like to consider those...
A ballpark number?
Yeah, we have a ballpark number of, well, about, do you want the total?
Well, we were thinking for the next generation to assist them with like a $500 stipend, right?
Yes. And
saying here, this could help offset some of the costs for this Congress or for their Congress, yeah. Okay, and then the extension contracts, are we at about, was it 12?
Yeah, around $12,000. Okay.
And so we probably don't need to act on that. I don't think it's probably the spot to do it right now, because it's going to fall on the agencies that are around the table. And going back to, I argue with Ed about this, of course, it said something about the necessary resources to carry off the executive order. And so I'll be contacting each of you for a share of money,
and
looking at you, to help us, complete the work that we've started under the executive order.
And Mr. Chair, I should have started by saying we did. You approved a estimated, very rough budget back in July, I believe, that was for primarily for the forums and the Congress, but also for the environmental review focus groups. We are well within and under that budget so far, so it's going well. We're going to have to make some adjustments for the Congress, and we had to make some small adjustments for the forums because of the size. But we're staying roughly on track. So we'll give you a final report as soon as we can, as soon as we have some more clarity as to the Congress plans.
Okay. Mike?
Just a quick comment. When we first conceived and thought of this idea and where we are today, it's phenomenal how it's tracked, how well it's gone, and to know that we're at this point. And then I know we gave you comments, but it does seem like you're on track for a very clear outcome and getting there and using the resources wisely. So I just want to commend everybody for doing that very well.
I think we are.
Yeah.
And thank you for sharing that. And again, compliments to Kate and Jeff, and certainly to Anna and Alan for the work they've done. Anna has been tireless in her advocacy for the next generation, and so we're so pleased to have you there. Also, I just a special shout out to John and to Eric and to Brian and Julie for the extra effort that you put into being part of the listening sessions across the state. That was phenomenal. And Brian was such an active participant in moderating the roundtables that we had. We had many roundtables, and I had a chance to join in a couple of them, and it was really good. And so thank you to the citizen members for stepping up and doing that. And certainly, I've already said my appreciation to the members of the board. Okay, Jeff?
Mr. Chair, 30 seconds, as long as you're acknowledging and thanking people.
Okay.
villainously neglected to thank all the people in the different agencies who have been contributing to the SAND report. Mm-hmm. I just didn't get to that, but I just want to let you know it's not my report. It's everybody's report, and they need to know that I know that, and you need to know all the help that your people are giving us. So that's all I wanted to say. Thanks.
Everyone has really stepped up. We have no money to speak of, except the Commissioner of Health has got a lot. All right. Is there a motion to adjourn? Hold on. Did we, Bob, was there anything else?
No, we're done.
We're done. Okay. Again, thank you very much. There is a motion.
Second.
There is a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you very much.